Jimmy D and the Wolf Podcast.
Bang, bang.
Playing through Hello, the everybody. Changes of life. We don't say our motto enough. We need to say that.
Yeah, that's actually an incredible motto for musicians. Playing through the changes of life, man. It's so
So
you coined that, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I did. Yes, I did. So
good work, man.
So thank you. One of my moments of creativity that come occasionally. So
yeah.
So we finished a song for a client and custom song. It's out on YouTube, posted on YouTube this morning, and pretty excited about it.
Yeah, funny thing, man. Like, we write songs all the time, and it was interesting to me that he pretty much gave us the ingredients for the song, and we put it together, and it's a very specific song, and it came out to be one of the best songs we've probably ever written, man. So
yeah, it's
a I'm pumped about it because it was, I mean, the first one was, it was a home run, dude. I mean, absolute home run, and he was overjoyed with it.
Right.
Which so makes you feel really good.
I put a performance video of it out on YouTube. So Kanyu is the name of it, K-A-N-Y-U. And we wrote it for a client, for his wife. He gave it to her on her birthday. And he was excited about it. And so
it's a great song, man.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think it's universal, even though it's very specific. I think it, I'd love to hear any comments. Thank you for creating your, are we still live? I just got a message from Be Live that's thank you for creating your live, but it says we're still live here. So we're going to keep going. Wow. What
Lord only knows, man.
All right. So here we are. We're a few weeks away from a big election, presidential election in the U.S.
Oh, my God.
Dude. Those of you in the U.S. And I voted already. We had early voting in Tennessee, so I've elected to turn off any and all advertisements and any messaging regarding the election and which candidate to vote for, because I've already voted. So I turned that switch off. If only we could do that.
It's so ugly, man. I was talking to my wife about it the other day, and she's 3 years younger than I am, and I'm 43, you know, and it seems to me that it all kind of got real ugly in the 90s. I mean, the elections back in the day, They didn't go to the darkest of places like they do now. It wasn't so gloves off, you know, up until the point that I think it probably started with maybe Bush, Clinton, to where it started getting really, 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 really ugly. And now it's just, it's anything. I mean, they're just flinging whatever at each other. And it's a bad, it paints a really bad portrait for our kids to see the people in positions of power in our country just, you know, just smearing each other as hard as they can. Because as a father, I mean, my boys are 12 and 11, and most importantly, you want them to grow up to be good people and not act that way towards others.
So, get rid of that outside. There's so much construction going on in my neighborhood. Trucks are coming by all the time.
It's crazy. They've built like a whole, like 40 places since I started coming down there, right by your place.
Yeah. Well, 20. The cul-de-sac over in that direction doesn't mean anybody watching this, but I think that was supposed to be 20 homes, and then they're tearing out, which was a wooded area. And I got to believe, as long as I've been working on it and as much equipment is there and men for over a year, I got to believe it's got to be seven figures already just in preparing it. They're not even done preparing it. They're building the road today, working on finishing the road. So it'll connect so that I can go through some of my favorite restaurants are in that direction, and I'll be able to get to them without having to go around because they'll connect it. But
man, you're in a great part of the country for restaurants, dude. This was one of the biggest things I noticed when I'm down there are food options. There's that great Korean place, and you got hot pot, and there's lots of great Mexican food. And then I come home, and we've got a couple good restaurants, but man, you're in a good spot because it's a diverse part of Nashville. So you have lots of great options.
I gotta be honest. When I first moved to Nashville, I was shocked. I did not expect the ethnic diversity that there is here.
Awesome, right?
It's beyond the it's beyond what I expected. I mean, it's many. I mean, I think the area that I'm in is a little less expensive, and that's why I came here, because I like a value. And when I go in the park, I hear a lot of, you know, when you meet someone, you're running in the park and someone's coming, and it'll often be a couple, you know, a couple of women or a couple of men, and they're talking in a language that I don't know. And it's not French or German.
Mm-hmm.
It's a language. Cause I mean, I know what French sounds like. I know what Spanish sounds like. I know what German sounds like. And Japanese, I spoke Japanese fluently, and not Chinese, but another type of a language. So,
Yeah, I think one of the cool things that's happened there as well is a lot of the fusion stuff. It's more so on the West Coast, but you find some of the fusion food in Nashville too, and it's great where these different cultures are kind of blending together with their culinary genius. I've noticed some food trucks down there where it'll be like Korean meets Mexican food or Jamaican meets Japanese, and it's always incredible stuff.
Yeah, food trucks do amazing work. My friend and housekeeper tells me that she lives in Franklin, and she was telling me about how they had food trucks that would come to their area. I've not been to their home, but so I don't know exactly what it's laid out as, but she said the food trucks would come there and the people, they'd go there and eat, and now the HOA put a ban on the food trucks, and everybody's up in arms because they enjoy going to the food trucks. So
they're always the best. Why are they banning them? Is it?
Well, I didn't get all the story, all the particulars, but she did just say that the HOA, the person running the HOA, there's only one person on it, and that person is kind of a Karen, I guess.
It's hurting the restaurants that bad.
Just needs to control things, you know.
Sure. I know they're doing the same thing with the Airbnbs down there, that they're trying to the powers that be are kind of trying to slow up the Airbnbs because they're hurting the hotel industry so bad.
Well, I think that's any city. Same thing with taxis. I mean, taxis and Uber, you know, a lot of tax in New York City, taxi drivers can't make it. And, you know, the medallions, which is what they have on the hood, and that allows you to be a taxi driver in New York City. And I think there's a limit on how many you can have. I think it's 13,000. There's a very discrete number of how many medallions are allowed in Manhattan. I think it's 13,500 or something like that. And those medallions, the value of them, $70,000, $100,000. And they would be traded because it was an asset. You could actually, if you owned one, you could use it as collateral to buy a home. I mean, and now that has been completely gone. And taxi companies are going bankrupt because medallions ain't worth what they were. Because now you can do Uber. You don't need to buy an expensive medallion to do Uber. And they do it cheaper. And in the taxis that I've ridden in, when I've taken taxis to and from the airport, when I used to live there, I mean, you take your life in the hands. It's like they must take the shocks out. There are no shocks, and they're going
it's
as fast
scary,
as they
man.
Can. And the potholes in the streets are horrible. So you're, I remember my brother-in-law and my sister came to visit us. And I think my brother-in-law was about sick when we got to the hotel, or when we got to where I was living, my apartment. just nasty, nasty. And so, you know, you wanna arrive not feeling like you're gonna throw up. So
sure.
Uber drivers don't do that. At least the last time I was in New York in 2018, was it? And I used Uber drivers in a whole different situation to and from the airport and whatnot.
Sure, man. The now, good, the cool,
water, you know, you need
yeah, to- the cool, that's what I was going to say. The cool Uber drivers even got candy bars and stuff for you.
Snacks, yeah. You want to, you need to charge your phone. Here's a charger, charge your phone. You know, you don't get that from a taxi driver.
Yeah, man, I had the first time I was ever in Los Angeles, I had a taxi driver the first day who was here from Iraq, and I'm convinced that dude got off of the plane for the first time in America 8 minutes before he hopped in that taxi and started driving around, because he was driving like a maniac, man. It was scary, and I had never been there before. You know, of course, I was young. I was like 20 and never been to the city like that, and this dude's like bouncing off the curb and stuff. It's scary. I don't know if they have aptitude tests for taxi drivers in LA and New York, but they should if they don't. Yeah, Uber's like a kinder, gentler kind of method of transportation.
Yeah.
You almost feel like you're getting in a car with a friend or something. But yeah, I'm certain it's hurt the industry. It's all changing so fast that they're taking the big companies out of it. Same thing with Airbnb, man. I know there's a lot of them. Even here in Madison, there's tons of Airbnbs. And they're getting ready to build a hotel. They're renovating an old building downtown to put in a $22 million hotel in downtown Madison. Like a Marriott or something. Yeah. That's huge for us, man. I mean, you know what the landscape is here.
Yeah.
Massive investment. But it's cool because they're salvaging the old building. It's like a 250-year-old cotton mill. And they're going in and renovating it room by room. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen with it when it's done. And it overlooks the river. It's a great time to do it.
Well, talking about technology that is interrupting, you know, there was an article that I read that was came across my email this morning, and it talks about trust busting. Some if you see an article that tries to put together, I've seen a few of these. Tried to put together the wealthiest individuals ever in the history of the recorded history. And it's very hard to figure out how wealthy was Solomon, King Solomon, in the Bible. I mean, he was very wealthy, but how do you come up with a number? And many other kings and wealthy people throughout the world. But there were measurements, I guess, and somebody did the best they could. And I've seen a couple of these. And it's amazing that on the list of the top 10 wealthiest individuals ever in the history of the world, to the best to equate, like gold. A pound of gold is worth, you can equate that, you know, because they used to collect gold back then, or an ounce of gold, or however you want to measure, a ton of gold. You can equate that. And when you see these lists, they'll usually be, depending on the list, there'll be as many as half of the 10 will be from the great late 19th century, early 20th century, when the Industrial Revolution happened, and we had many, some called them robber barons. You know, we had Carnegie gave a lot of money back. You had Rockefeller, you had many, many others that are escaping me right now, but many of those people got very, very, very wealthy. And then what changed after that was the trust busting. You know, Teddy Roosevelt was a trust buster and broke up a lot of those big conglomerates and kind of levied the playing field so that all that power wasn't concentrated in just a few hands. And this article talks about how we may be coming to that now, or there's already been steps. Google, when Google was formed in 1998, the U.S. economy looked a lot different. Just think of what the economy was. Back then, there's a chart here that it talks about if you take all of the companies that have 100 people or less,
yeah,
how many people are employed by companies that have 100 or fewer, or even 1,000, or to say less, fewer than 100 workers in that company. And in 1993, 40% of the American workers were employed by companies that had less than 100 workers. And about 35% were employed by companies that had 1,000 plus workers. And then you've got 100 to 999, which is the middle, and a small percentage. And that really hasn't changed. That class of companies, 25, it stayed about the same. Here's the graph. Oh, I don't think you can see it. But here you can see this down here is the, now I feel like a weatherman in front of a green screen. I'm doing it backwards. This is the middle. That hasn't really changed. But up here, this is the less than 100, and this is the above 1,000. And you can see that now it's changed. It's kind of swapped places. Now what's on peak over here is the bigger companies. So what it's saying is that the economy has changed rapidly, and big corporations are much stronger than they were in 1993, just using 1993 as a reference point. And so there's a new era of trust busting. And one thing that has happened that the Justice Department, our U.S. Justice Department, filed a lawsuit against Google yesterday, accusing it of holding an illegal monopoly over internet search and search advertising. And state officials are investigating the company as well. And both federal and state officials are also scrutinizing Facebook, Amazon, and other large companies. So we could be seeing a major shift in breaking up some of these big behemoths.
Wow. It's a game changer.
Could be. And it's some of the articles say that a Washington Post article ran a clever experiment comparing the quality of Google searches in 2020 and 2000. I don't know how you possibly could do that if you didn't have a time machine. How could you go back to 2000 and do a search and compare it to today?
The quality. Yeah, because everything's moved so much since then.
But he apparently somehow did this study, and his conclusion is that Google is increasingly failing us. And another antitrust expert, Tim Wu, must be a great guy, he's got a great first name, said a secure monopoly doesn't have to improve its product. Why would you spend money on research and development
if you don't have to? Sure.
You're not going to do it. So that's competition. If we're a capitalist society, competition is what you need to build.
It's what fuels everything.
It fuels the economy. And if you have a monopoly, you don't have to compete, because you why would you innovate? You don't spend any money on scientists and research people, because you got the market already. So Google, of course, refutes those claims. Duh. I mean, that's about as expected as they're not going to say, oh, you got us.
Yeah, right.
We're right.
We're monopolizing everything and not trying anymore.
So Busted. You don't even have to put that in the article that Google is denying it. I mean,
yeah,
that's,
of course,
you know, so it's interesting. But it says whatever the outcome of the case, it will most likely take years to play out. And no single case will change the direction of the U.S. economy. But a larger campaign against monopolization could. Although increasing corporate concentration is hardly the only reason so many families are struggling, it does seem to be an important one. And there have been many articles talking about how, you know, I mean, we've our economy is growing, but all of the spoils are going to the top 1%.
Of course.
There's a lot of research showing that average wage is actually stagnated over the last 20 years. I mean, in some cases gone down. So our economy is doing well, but it only is doing well for the wealthy people on average. So the top 1% or maybe the top 5%. So just interesting. It'll be a change in times. Could be a change in times.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to me because there's so many people that are so hard one direction or the other. I mean, there are many people that think the word capitalism is almost a cuss word, and many people think the word socialism is almost a cuss word. But really, I mean, it's an experiment in balancing the two. That's what our economy really is. I mean, as capitalism moves so far forward, what's the only way to scale that back?
Well, you know, the byword of a lot of conservatives are saying that the other side is all socialistic, whereas people from other countries are amazed because Joe Biden would be considered centrist or even a little right in a, sure. in a lot of other developed countries around the world, and our right would be off the grid because our right is really right compared to many other countries. But if you look at capitalism versus moving towards socialism, those who are advocating for breaking up a monopoly are actually, and it's this current administration, which is President Trump, which is a conservative administration. But if you're going after a monopoly, that is not capitalistic behavior, because capitalistic, everything is free reign. It's Adam Smith called it the invisible hand. Everything is developed by let the economy, let the free market establish it, and minimal regulations, almost no regulations if you can. And if you go after monopoly and breaking up companies, that's definitely not capitalistic behavior. That is more leftist behavior,
sure.
more socialistic behavior, really.
Absolutely.
So it's always a mix. It's always a mix. There is no purely capitalistic country economy in the world. And there is no
there can't be, man. I mean, it just doesn't work. I mean, if it was purely capitalistic, you'd have two guys with a gazillion dollars and everybody else would be starving.
And dying of, I mean, you don't have any regulations, people, you know, there's nothing to protect you from people putting, I mean, this cup could be toxic, you know, cheapest material, even if it's poisons you, well, it's cheap, so we're going to put it out. I mean, that's exactly. what, I mean, capitalistic systems at their peak, I mean, you have to assume there's some altruism there. You have to assume there's some, you know, good wishing for well-being, and that pretty much disappears. There's many evidences of stories of that disappearing. Corporations do not have ethics and morals.
Can't legislate morality.
Right.
So the moral of the story is read up and know what you're voting for.
Well, try not to get political. I try to dance on eggshells about not being too.
Oh, me too, man.
You know,
everybody's.
I just talk about and don't take positions based on what you're told to take. I mean, analyze the situation a bit. Anyway, talk a little bit about that. There was a story in the Times. It's a kind of interesting story. I was looking for it around here because I thought I'd saved it, but it was about an individual in India who's a Hindu, and there are a lot of working class people in India who actually greatly admire President Trump. He's not very popular amongst the middle class, the white collar, but and there's a lot of, I mean, you talk about India has an incredible disparate. I mean, you got the top level that are wealthy and the rest live in the poverty that is way below anything that we have. I mean, they have a lot of super poor people. You ever see Slumdog Millionaire? Did you see
that? Yeah.
You know, that's, I think, indicative of a lot of the poverty there. Anyway, this individual is maybe working class, I guess. And he actually declared President Trump as his God. He said, President Trump is my God. And he built a life-size replica of President Trump. He had it built. It really did, wasn't a very good job. It looked a little bit like President Trump, but the only way you could tell was the blonde hair and the suit and the red tie. It was close, but it was, he had a local person do it, build it. And he would worship this, he would pray to this statue every day. According to the article, it says sometimes 1 to 2 hours a day. And President Trump, when he got COVID, of course, anything that happens in the U.S. is national news. If the president of India got COVID, I don't know about it.
We wouldn't know about it, yeah.
We wouldn't know about it. But, people around the world know what's going on in our country because we are the largest economy and the largest country. Largest economy, not the largest country. And anyway, so when President Trump got COVID, he became very concerned and started fasting. And I'm going to try to say this with a straight face and have empathy. He literally died. The Indian guy died. And he was young. He's like, he's in his 30s, apparently healthy, but he died.
Wow. Dedication.
Dedication, yeah. They don't know what caused it. The article was like, why? Fasting shouldn't. There are people who have been hunger fast for 40 days or more and didn't kill them.
How long did he make it?
What's that?
How long did he make it?
Well, how long ago did Trump have COVID? It's 2 weeks. It hadn't been that long.
He didn't hold up very well.
No, he didn't. How long ago did President Trump go in the hospital? It was like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it was a couple weeks ago.
So he couldn't have started fasting more than a couple weeks ago. And it was in the New York Times last Sunday. So he lasted about a week. Now, maybe there are other health issues there. I don't wish anyone that sort of, to pass. But,
sure. I know.
So that. The article then said that they wondered if the neighbors were going to try to keep up the shrine to President Trump in the backyard.
Wow. Unbelievable.
People, I don't know much. I know a little bit about their religion, but they worship many gods. They have many gods in the Hindu religion. So you can always add one more, I guess. And I guess living people can be considered gods, I guess. I'm not 100% sure how that works. I worship the one true God in heaven, and he would never get COVID because everything he created. But not to get off on religion, but...
I didn't realize that he had that kind of presence in India.
Well, everyone in the world knows about it, first of all.
Of course.
They know about everything that happens in the U.S. And there are some people who, there is a rising strain of nationalism in many countries around the world. It preceded Trump's inauguration and it's been going on. Nationalism is a thing that people want to be more about, their nation.
Sure.
So
that sentiment was really prevalent in England already.
Yeah, Brexit. There you go. Brexit, perfect example. So this has been going. This is not just something that happened in 2016.
Sure.
Upon, President Trump winning the election, it's a trend that's been going on.
Yeah, it just tapped into a general feeling that was already there.
The article was interesting. It was saying in general, by white collar or educated, college educated folks in India. And India is highly, their educated folks are highly educated, highly
sure.
folks. But among that class, they abhor President Trump. But amongst the blue collar, they have an affinity to him. It's interesting.
Yeah, they're pumping out a lot of engineers. I know that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're intelligent, they work hard, we have a lot of Indians. When I was in engineering school, all of our grad students were Chinese. I remember I had some classes that I took were taught by Chinese, and there was a whole crew of them. They lived together. I mean, this is in South Dakota. I went to school in School of Mines in South Dakota. And South Dakota only has 800,000 people, and Rapid City, where we went to school, is 40,000 people. And there aren't very many Chinese ethnicities, probably more now, but this was, you know, a long time ago. And there were probably some of the few Chinese people in Rapid City, and they all hung together. And their English was bad. I remember I had to take a course or had to take a lab from one of them, and I tried to do homework and try to ask him some questions, and it was horrible. I could not understand a word that he was saying because his English was so broken. But now there's a lot of Indians, you know, Indian, not American Indians, but Indians who are doing that as well, you know, especially in Silicon Valley.
Tech drives that. I mean, tech drives a lot of the ethnic diversity, even on a small scale in here in Madison. When my friend Henderson came here to work at a local, when Henderson came here to work at a local manufacturing business, and you've heard me talk a lot about Henderson. Traveled internationally and worked for Seagate and stuff. One of the first things he did was implemented some technology and started bringing in engineers from China. And all of a sudden, there's this boom per capita of Chinese folks in little bitty Madison, Indiana. And I get tickled because now when I go to pick up my son from school, when he started school, there were like no Chinese kids at his school. Now when I go to pick him up, there's like 10 or 12 Chinese kids in the line. And I just giggle every time because I'm like, I know how that happened. That was my buddy that moved here and started hiring Chinese engineers.
So they weren't temporary. They came and settled, and sure, somehow they must have gotten some sort of visa, to stay.
Yeah. Yeah. And tech really fuels a lot of that. You know, it's like you were saying, Silicon Valley is really, really diverse ethnically, because as tech progresses, as tech moves, you know, there are more Indian people, there are more Chinese people, because they're pumping out. I mean, it's the law of average per capita. They have so many people that it's going to be that way, but they're pumping out so many more engineers and physicists and things of that nature. There are more people getting PhDs there than we're even capable of pumping out, more doctors.
At least in engineering, it seems that Americans don't have as much interest in getting that graduate degree. And you go to engineering, most of them are from another country. They're Indian or Chinese national. So and then if they all go home, you know, if they don't stay here. And there has been a cutback on, not all immigration has been drastically cut back under our current administration. The both illegal, and there's been, of course, a fight against the illegal immigration, but even legal immigration has been drastically cut. So there are companies that have been depending on that sort of work that are struggling because they can't bring them in to do the work they need to do.
Yeah.
To some extent. I mean, it hasn't hurt, apparently. The profits are still doing well, apparently.
We're not producing enough people with educations to do a lot of those jobs. It's like doctors. I mean, you've made the comment before, we don't have enough doctors per capita compared to, in one sense, we have the greatest healthcare in the world, and in another sense, we have the worst, because there's not near enough doctors in the states per capita, and we're not producing enough doctors to even maintain that level. We have to bring in doctors from India. We have to bring in doctors from China, everywhere, really. What's the stat? Do you remember the statistic? There's one doctor for every so many people in the United States.
I did have that. It was an article that compared the doctors per capita. And
it's not good.
Developed countries, and we are doctors per 1,000 capita. or however you want to look at it. I mean, the numbers end up the same depending how many decimal points are there. But doctors per capita, or doctors per 1,000 people, we are below the median, I think the median, for developed countries. Actually pretty low. And, and that especially is a problem because many of them are in cities and they specialize in high dollar specialties. And that really means that in rural areas, there's a real shortage of doctors because they're focused on the cities, the higher areas. So it's an issue, definitely an issue when you compare, if you're willing to objectively look at healthcare in other countries and results, deaths, and also at many different things. Like one thing, there's been a spike in maternal deaths of women giving birth. In the last 5 to 10 years in this country, there's been a spike. And we're like 3 to 4 times higher per birth, deaths per birth, than other developed countries. I don't know why.
Shouldn't be that way.
So infant mortality is also lower than other developed countries. And just life expectancy. Our life expectancy is actually going down versus other countries are skyrocketing. And our life expectancy is going down because it's an average, and we have so many. Well, we have a boom in overdoses. We have a lot of drug overdoses.
And fast food.
Sorry.
And fast food.
So we have an issue with, we're skewed by those early deaths because if you take somebody who dies at 30. From a drug overdose, just take randomly, that greatly skews.
Or suicide. Suicide rates are through the roof with young people.
Or suicide, yeah. So those things are affecting our life, average life expectancy. But we're the only developed country that our average life expectancy is actually decreasing versus other developed countries are skyrocketing. Now, the country with the highest life expectancy in the world is Japan, of course. And I know a lot about Japan. I lived there and I spoke Japanese. Used to be fluently, now barely, I suppose. But Japan is their diet, and primarily, you have to walk a lot because you go walk to the train. I remember when I was living there, I lost a lot of weight because I was constantly walking. I'd walk forever to get to the train.
New York too, man. First thing I noticed the first time I went to New York, and I'm from Indiana. I'm not slamming my home state, but we've got a lot of big people in Indiana. You know, it's a lot of breaded, fried food and growing up on the farm and eating whatever you want every day. And you drive everywhere. And the first time I went to New York City, it was like, where's all the fat people? Because they're walking every day. I mean, to get to and from work, you got to walk to the tram and walk to the subway and walk 10 blocks to the next one or whatever.
Yeah.
And it really is a better way. I mean, public transportation, direct correlation with health.
And now there are these zones that they have discovered. Microzones where people average over 100 years life expectancy, and there's one
Monaco.
Of
them isn't Monaco one of those?
Well, I know there are a couple in Europe. I know there's some in a specific place in Italy, and I don't recall where it is. And there's like five in the most recent article that I read. They named five of them, but the one they were focusing on was Okinawa. And Okinawa actually is part of Japan, but it's not really Japanese culture. They have their own culture. It's more of a Pacific island that Japan ended up with, but it's not really. In fact, Okinawans are discriminated against by native Japanese. Sorry, just a fact, because they're really not Japanese ethnicity. They're more Pacific Islander ethnicity. They've been forced to speak Japanese. They speak Japanese. I mean, they're part of the Japanese nation now, and we have a big base there, but they have their own culture. I've not yet been there. I want to go there big time because it's such a beautiful island, but it's pretty far from Japan. It's south of Japan on an island. kind of like we have Hawaii, you know, is Hawaii, yeah. I mean, Hawaii is like a different country compared to an American.
Sure.
I mean, it's part of America. It's our 50th state, but their culture is radically different. Now they've been part of our country for long enough that it becomes more Americanized, but things are different over there. And so Okinawa is different too. And they have, I don't know if it's the entire island, but they have an entire, Michael Stucker says, processed foods with added chemicals, suicide, PTSD, and childbirth is a cause of a lot of death in the U.S. That's true.
Absolutely.
Hi, Michael. How's it going? I'm sorry. I just saw your note. I don't know how long it's been there. What was my point? So in Okinawa, they said a major part of it is not just the food, but it's also social. They have social groups. And they say that if you, you know, have a healthy life, you have to have social
interactions.
Thank you.
It's absolutely true, man.
And they have. I mean, if you find an interest that you're in, you will be found. They expect you to find a group that you can share your interests and meet. And they have a name for them, and I can't remember the name, but it's a Japanese name that I wasn't familiar with because that was not a name I'd heard on the main on Japanese islands. But it's a very Okinawan thing. And it's a major part. They said it wasn't just the diet or the genetics. This social interaction was a major part of healthy living.
Yeah. Having love in your life, man. It's a big deal. I've seen firsthand people that I cared about that got older. And you hear about this all the time. Two things. One is when you hear about the married couple that was married for 40 years and one of them dies. And the other one's right behind them. They were in perfect health. They die of a broken heart. And the second one that I've seen many times is people that work a certain job and their social life is built around that job. And then they retire and then they die.
Yeah, yeah.
Be it a manufacturing job or whatever, you know. They get away from having that human interaction. And they pass. And that's a lot of, I believe personally, I'm far from a psychologist, but that's a lot of our younger suicide rates and depression. In my opinion, it's linked to a lack of that direct social interaction that they're kind of socially deprived. They're more plugged in than ever, but at the same time, simultaneously, they're more detached than ever because they're not legitimate human interactions. There's something about social media that it's just missing the mark, you know.
Very much, I agree. Yeah, and you'll see people. You go out to dinner, and you'll see people sitting next to each other at the table, not even interacting, but interacting with their phones. I mean, right. That's our society, and I'm guilty of it too. I mean,
sure, we all are, man.
You know, so.
But just imagine. I mean. We're working on achieving that balance, and we came up when there were no cell phones. Imagine what that's like for younger people that have never lived in a world without cell phones. There is no balance for them. That's all they know of social interaction. I mean, there's a void there.
Absolutely.
I see it every day, man. It's like even driving around my neighborhood. When I see a kid out riding a bike, I'm like, oh, cool, a kid on a bicycle. Used to be kids everywhere on bicycles, and now it's like, oh, that kid, he's really branching out, playing outside, you know?
Well, I think that's interesting because Japan has changed so much. I mean, they still have that long life expectancy, but I think I talked about this in a previous podcast some time ago about their aged folk that used to be the Japanese houses would have like three levels, and there'd be three generations living there. Everybody lived together, and the aged would live there, and they take care of them. And there was an article that just broke my heart a year or two ago now in the New York Times, profiling a particular town. See, now if you don't live in one of the major cities in Japan, Tokyo, Osaka, Kobe, if you don't live in the major cities, the rest of the country has been left behind. It's not as developed. It's probably 20, 30 years behind. Kind of like you always refer to Madison as being Mayberry.
It really is.
I think it's worse in Japan because if you really want to make it, you have to go to the city. They're much more about being in the city, and they're elderly. There was a profile of a bunch of them living in this apartment building, and they wouldn't get a card or a call from their living children anytime, not even on birthdays or Christmas or any holidays. They were just completely abandoned. And in one generation, that has turned around. Whereas it used to be the Japanese culture was much more than American culture of taking care of the elderly. It has become that they're worse than we are, based on my observation. And so what is that going to do to affect their longevity? Because, I mean, you're living by yourself and you're abandoned. You're probably not going to live, you know, that long, because we just talked about this.
So, yeah, and the flip side is there's so many life lessons that the last generation, you know, grandparents, parents, kids, now all of a sudden the kids aren't learning those things from their grandparents because their grandparents are tucked away in a nursing home or whatever. And some of the best stuff, I mean, for me personally, when I was a little kid, most of those golden life nuggets that you get are from older people. And it might not settle in at the time, but then you go learn your lesson and you hear that little voice of like, oh yeah, that's why they told me that. I think our younger people are missing a lot of that as well.
Well, and I want to go back to one thing you said. You were talking about couples that die. My dad, he lived another 7 years after my mom passed, but he was a shell of his former self. He was just waiting to die. He had a valve that they wanted to repair in his heart. And he said, no operation. I'm ready to go. And he was so lonely. I would go visit him one to two times a week. I'd cook him a meal. We'd watch Wheel of Fortune and I'd spend time with him every week for sure. And sometimes twice a week. And I'd call him during the week and I'd call him and I'd say, how you doing? I'm lonely. I mean, it's not funny, but my sister told me after he passed that he had offered her and her husband $100,000 a year to come live with him.
Oh.
You know, it just breaks my heart. You know, he was a wealthy man. I mean, he amassed all this estate, all this farmland, and he could have easily afforded that. And my sister said that she actually considered it because she was getting her PhD and a lot of her work could have been done remotely, but not all of it. She still had to meet with some of her advisors. They actually considered it. But it would have been a major, they were living in the Twin Cities at the time, or they were living in Rochester, near Rochester, Minnesota, at the time. But when I heard that, I mean, I was seeing him, but he wanted a woman to take care of the house. I mean, just being brutally honest, he grew up in an age when, you know, I'd come and cook a meal for him and he'd tell me how great it was, but it wasn't a woman cooking it for him. So.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, man. I mean, it's just old school. That's how he came up.
You know, he never offered me $100,000 to live with him.
Right.
I would have only had to move about 40 miles.
Isn't that something?
All right. Well.
Yeah. Well, man. I'm looking forward to seeing you tonight.
You bet.
You're going to be up.
I will. I'm going to pull up.
Yeah, man. Looking forward to it. Thank you all for listening and watching.
All right, Jimmy D and the Wolf Podcast.
Bye-bye.
See you next time.